Welcome to episode 50 of the Empowering Elves podcast. Today, Sherry Liptak joins us to talk about teaching reading through context clues. Welcome to the Empowering Elves podcast. I'm Tan Nguyen, and the goal of this podcast is to serve language learners just like me and to empower passionate teachers just like you. When I was in elementary school, I have to confess that I was a fake reader. I happily plopped down on the carpet and lay down on the pillow with book in hand. There was a lot of page turning and eye scanning, but there was not a lot of reading at all. I was significantly behind grade level, so I didn't understand the text. I would peer up and think, what are all my classmates doing with all these words? One of the things my peers were doing was using context clues to construct meaning. At that age, I bet I was constantly using context clues around me to understand what was going on in school, at home, and in my neighborhood. Now, how do I teach students who are just like me using context clues in their lives, but now applying it to reading or watching a video? Sherry Liptak and I will share our approaches to explicitly teaching context clues so that students understand unfamiliar vocabulary words, with the goal of them understanding the text. If you're interested in learning more strategies to support language learners, I have several highly interactive courses. You can find more information by going to my website. I hope you consider joining. Now, on to today's podcast. Today with us is a friend and colleague, Sherry Liptak. Do you want to introduce yourself, Sherry?
Sure. I am a district ELL teacher in Chilliwack, BC, Canada. Kind of, I don't know, living the dream. I'm working with ELs at three different sites, around 50 students, and all my co-teachers in public school classrooms.
And you're the itinerant teacher where you move around to three different schools. And so you have schedules with them and you put a lot of miles in your cars.
Yes, I do. My whole department, all elementary schools in Chilliwack are served by itinerant teachers. So we all have two or three sites and we all get mileage on our vehicles.
And it is a living a dream. It's really great to work with teachers and supporting them. Collaborating with them and working for kids. That's why we do this.
Yep.
So we're here today to talk about teaching context clues. We'll just have a conversation. We'll talk about the why, the how, the when, and maybe possible some don'ts as we do this from learning from our lessons. So can you share why you teach context clues and why it's so important to teach it?
For me, it was the realization of independence in students. And as fluent readers ourselves, like, we don't stop every time we encounter something and look it up in a dictionary or something like that, right? We use these skills to get the message that we need out of the story. And, you know, teaching students to, well, look it up in the dictionary or giving them the meanings, you create dependent learners. They're dependent on the dictionary or they're dependent on you. And I think the most successful students, you know, that you can brag about are the ones that don't need you anymore. And so to me, it's that realization that we want to create independent learners and bonus transferable skills. They can use this, you know, in all their classes and all sorts of different types of books and stuff like that. So I want to encourage independence in my students.
Yeah, the joke in our field is we're in this job to be out of a job.
Yeah. Right?
So we're trying to get kids to not need us anymore. And this is why there's a term in the field where we say long-term English learners or fossilized learners. Though these are very negative terms, there are kids who struggle or they plateau. It's because for me, I think they are dependent upon us and not instead of being dependent upon strategies. Like what you said, we will, when they read a text, and they will read text in the future, we can't be in their classes. For you particularly, you're running around to three different schools. I'm running around between five different teachers. And we can't be with every kid. And even if we could, we wouldn't want to. We really want to have kids say, okay, here's a difficult text. I'm unfamiliar with this word. What are the strategies I can use that I've learned to help me get unstuck, to help me understand the word? And that's why I also teach context clues.
I think there's also an element of being okay with being stuck. It is okay to not know everything all of the time. And that's something that I think all learners have to come to terms with at some point.
Right. And then there are some times where there are words that I read in a book and I'm like, oh, I don't know. And there are no context. And I just keep reading. And that's okay. Because not every word is essential. But the skill that we want kids to have is to discern, okay, I have the confidence or the belief, I guess, as readers, like the identity as readers is that I'm confident that I don't need every word, but I know that I can continue and it'll come to me. So let's look at how. Do you have a process of teaching context clues?
Yeah, I wing it a lot. I find I'm a very like intuitive teacher and I just kind of like, oh, well, you need to know this and you know what is in there that we can figure this out. And so it just kind of grew organically. And I think luckily I was along the lines of best practice because, you know, the student was figuring stuff out. He was getting where he needed to go. And so I didn't really realize what I was doing. I just kind of like, you know, hey, the answer's in there. You don't need me to give it to you. So let's kind of look at the clues that they're giving us. And I just kind of like dove in. I didn't have a plan. I hadn't, you know, laid it out before or anything like that. It just kind of came up and I ran with it.
Yeah, me too. I started just, it's in our practice where we just work with kids and help kids. And then slowly the steps slowly emerge. And in my practice, I analyze like, oh, okay. So this is what I do to help kids or to teach kids. And for me, my through the years, as I slowly figure out how to teach context clues, I look at a text and I pre-select a word that I think that as I read the text, I'm like, oh, great. This would be great to teach context clues. And this doesn't mean like every page has to have something that we teach, not every chapter. It's once in a while as we read, we say, okay, this is an opportunity to really show you how a skill called context clues to help us figure out, because there might be clues. Most of the time, there are not clues. But when they are, here's what readers can do. Yeah. So I pre-select a word. And then after guided reading, I pause and say, I want to have you go back at this text. And here are a few words. Here's the word that we're looking at. The word, it's like a sandwich. The word is the meat or the patty or the veggie patty in the middle. And sometimes there are clues at the beginning and sometimes there are clues at the end. Go back and search for the clues to see, do these clues help you understand the vocabulary word? And they do, and they go back and they search for it. And then we just hold a discussion and we say, oh, what did you notice? Like, oh, what clues did you have? So going back to that sandwich idea of sometimes the clues are before the word or after the word and kids have to find out where it is. And at the end, we just have a discussion about it. But the discussion is not just the clues and how they connect. It's really connected to metacognition of saying, hey, how did we figure out this word? And we say, hey, how can you use this strategy in the future when you encounter an unfamiliar word? And kids will say, oh yeah, we just look for words in the beginning, groups of words at the end, but sometimes there might not be meanings at all. And so that's what we do.
Do you ever actually attack the word itself when you look at like prefixes, suffixes, and stuff like that, like hints that are within the word itself and break down words and look at patterns in word?
Do you want to talk about that?
There's times where I've looked at a word and you know, like even if it's the word prefix itself, right? And you teach, well, what does pre mean? And, you know, you can list a few pre words and students will pick up a pattern and they're like, oh, well, words with pre often mean like before. And so even if there's no context in the story itself, sometimes the word will give you a clue, its own meaning. And so fixed, and they can find small words within words. Sometimes, you know, instead of, if they don't have any background, if they don't have pieces of the sandwich to work with, then, you know, they can look at the word itself and sometimes it will have a clue. And sometimes it's English, they'll be blatantly wrong, but, you know, it's a place to start and play with.
Yeah. Kylene Bearers has a vocabulary flow chart. So Kylene Bearers has something called, she has word gaps, and she says exactly what you said. Do we attack the word? Do we look at the word? She says, have you heard this word before? Can you use this word in a sentence? Which word were the problems here? Or can you use part of the word to help you understand? And then she said, what is the rest of the sentence or the passage that can help you understand? And where you're talking about, can you use the part of the word to help you understand? And that's another strategy for vocabulary. Yeah. So when I interviewed Margaret McEwen, and she said, don't just stop during reading and go through the context clues teaching, because she says you want kids to really love reading. You want kids to continue reading. You want kids to go with the flow of reading and not to stop. And that's, I used to do that, where I would say, oh, let's read. And here's a perfect chance for context clues, and let's pause. And let's go through the process. And after her conversation, I realized, oh, you're right. Who wants to do that? Who wants to read and then be forced to stop and analyze the text and analyze the word and develop a strategy? And so now I've moved to an approach where it's after the reading, after kids have read the section that we looked at, we go back and we say, this is the strategy. Here's an opportunity to use something called context clues. Do you have any things when you want to talk about with teachers where things you're like, oh, this is something you should consider, or try not to do this part when we...
I find with ELLs, it came up once and kind of opened my eyes, and we had this, we were reading the story, and I think like background knowledge can become a context clue as well.
Yes.
And so we looked at the cover of the book, and what was the story called? Nothing Scares Me. I think it was called. And on the cover, there was two boys under a tent, you know, looking all scared and dark and all of that. And I think any one of us, we see this story, we think camping and ghost stories and stuff like that. And then I talked to one of my refugees about it. And, you know, it's refugee camp and tent living as they're, you know, like escaping something. And so they're not, you know, the context of when I see this picture, I think camping and storytelling. And when they see this picture, they think, you know, fleeing and, you know, refugee camp. And I think having those conversations about what you see and thinking out loud kind of keeps you and your students on the same page. So if we hadn't had that conversation, I think he would have been interpreting the story very differently from me.
So you were talking about background knowledge as context, bringing background knowledge to really help kids understand the vocabulary. And so I guess I'm looking at, on my blog, I guess students and I read an article, it's a book called Sold. It's a beautifully written book about how some children are sold into trafficking. It's Patricia McCormick's book. It's an award-winning book. Sold. And so you wouldn't use it for your younger kids, you would use it for your older kids, and with permission from parents and the principal, of course. But their sentence was, so this is the time where, let me read it to you again. And so, and when I brush my teeth with a twig from the neem tree, Tally cops me, nibbling her twig as solemn as a monk. In this example, there's actually no context clues. But kids have experience of what monks are like. When I taught this in Laos, my kids, Buddhist culture is very prominent in Laos. And there were monks in the morning that the ritual is to receive alms and walk around in the village and walk around the streets to receive alms for the people who are waiting them and kneeling and just waiting to offer food to the monks. And the kids would say, well, let's look at that sentence. You don't know what the word solemn means. So what part of the text do you understand? And the kids they tried to figure out neem tree. They understood what twig means. And they said they understood the difference between nibbling and chewing and chomping. And then they looked at the word monk and they said, oh, how are monks supposed to eat? Oh, well, monks are supposed to be gentle, serene, not rushed. And so that none of those things in there gave them a context of what really, besides nibbling is gentle. And they think, oh, okay, well, if a monk eats, how do they eat? Do they chomp and do they make noises? Or do they just, they're gentle with the way they, or they're mindful with the way they eat? And they finally understood that solemn means like, in this context, it means gentle, not
calm.
Yeah. In another context, it would mean sad or melancholy. But in this context, the monks are not sad. They're just calm and gentle. And that's what you thought. And that's what we talk about. To go back to what you were saying, to bring back our knowledge. And as I read this, I realize that when I'm thinking about the lesson that I did with this, I said, oh, wow, solemn is actually not really important to teach. It's not a central word. But
it's not a tier two for sure.
It's not a tier two for sure, but it definitely goes back. But at the end of this, we did look. What I guess what I did was I could have done was not instead of stopping in the middle of the text and having them go through the context of using their background knowledge, I should have just said at the end, hey, there are sometimes we can bring our own background knowledge to the text. And this is an example of it. And so this is, I guess, one of my don'ts is consider, be careful with, this is my advice for myself. We really have to be intentional with the words we teach. So maybe solemn might not have been the word I should have been teaching in that context. Because one, it didn't really have a context. It did provide great opportunities for background knowledge. But two, it's that really central to the text. It was just a description. And so I guess the word that we're talking about in this episode is about intentionality. We have to be super intentional about what we teach and how we teach and where we teach. So watching this, thinking about this lesson that I taught like 4 years ago, I was like, wow, intentionality really grows and it's really different when we teach with intention.
I think I'm a little bit counter there.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I've noticed that I have a strong element of wing it in my lessons. So I'm working on that. But like thinking about what you said and suggestions for teachers and not so much the don'ts, because I don't think anybody wants to hear a don't do this, don't do that sort of thing. But, you know, do consider the background that your students bring to the story, because they are going to bring their own context. So do consider and maybe don't take for granted that they're all bringing the same life experience to the story. Because even like here in Canada, here in Chilliwack, in one of my schools, you know, all the students in the classroom are bringing very different experiences. So, you know, we have to remind ourselves to be cognizant of the experience that the students bring to the table. And I think the other one might go a little bit counter to your intentionality or maybe works together, but like if you're teaching the strategy, then do you really need to be that intentional with the words? So I suppose you could go through the book and pick out, say, 20 words.
Yeah.
And then have the students pick. These are the words that you encountered. Which one do you want to suss out? And kind of give them that freedom to, well, solemn, I don't care about that word. It's not calling to me. And so let the students pick. Right? Where did you get hung up in the story? Where do you want more information? And you're kind of winging it, that intentionality. You risk a student popping up a word and you're just like, you know, well, we're going to learn it together, right? So, and I think students appreciate that when we do that with them. But I think, you know, like we want them to grasp the strategy. And so why are we telling them what words they need to know? Mm. Especially, like you said, solemn's not a tier two word. So, you know, maybe we can give them that freedom to, well, what do you want to learn? You know, where did you get hung up in the book? And I think it keeps the passion to the book, keeps them in the driver's seat.
I appreciate that perspective. You're saying just really add student choice.
Yeah.
And intentionality, you're saying. It can, at times when we're intentional, it can be rigid. And when we are, when we're attuned to kids and we create space for them to be part of our lessons. And you're saying if the strategy is the thing that we're trying to focus on, maybe the word is not that important. We can look at, maybe we give them a set of words. We can say, oh, here are a few words that has context clues embedded in them. I want you to think, which ones do you want to practice the strategy with? Yeah. So with the way that I had done it, the way I described it is me pre-selecting a word and end up having kids apply the strategy. I mean, you're saying pre-select the words, but don't focus. One option is to not just say, this is the word we're going to learn and practice them today. Well, that leads us to talking about the last part of the podcast, which is the traffic light teaching. It's so imagine a traffic light, and for teaching, what are the green thing? What's one green thing that you recommend teachers do? Green is something that you recommend teachers do as much as possible. Yellow is something that they should start considering or questioning in their practice, or be more aware of. And red is something that you recommend a teacher abandons or really stops or just do less of. It can be, it doesn't have to be about vocabulary, reading, sorry, it doesn't have to be about reading or context clues. It can be about teaching in general.
I think for me, I'm sure I'm not the only one out there, so I'm not sure about teachers, but I think myself, my green light is definitely that, you know, consider the student and where they're coming from and what they bring to the table. And English, no English, whatever, what they bring to the table is each student's going to be a little different. They're going to have a story to tell and experience to bring. And so I need to always keep that lens all polished up and shiny. I think the hesitation where I need to be careful is, you know, is this like my need to tell you, or do you need to know this? And that, you know, why are we doing this? Because I think you've lost your lesson as soon as you get that first kid who says, why do I need to know this? Or is this going to be on the test? It's just as bad, right? And so, you know, if there's no grand reason to know this, why are we all wasting our time? And for me, the red light is always and still, like, stop talking so much, right? Like you said, the one doing the talking is the one doing the thinking, and the one doing the thinking is the one doing the learning. Right. So if I already know all this already, why am I doing all the talking?
Right. That's Samantha's Bennett quote. I heard it on Carol Salva's podcast, and that really stuck with me. You're right. Having kids talk as much as possible. So learning is social.
Yeah. And that's how we process information, and that's how we, you know, decide whether it fits for us or how it fits for us or what elements or whatnot. And the students are there to do that,
processing.
Not me.
Yeah.
Theoretically, I've done it already.
Right. And we're really just facilitators of student discussion, of student interaction.
Yeah. Yes. More facilitating, less directing.
Right. So it was my quote, students talking all day, mostly to each other.
Yeah.
Well,
I've heard that a time or two.
Yeah. I invite you to rate this podcast and leave a comment. Each episode takes 3 to 4 hours to record and edit, so your comments make all the hours worth it. And your reviews will help educators like you find the podcast. Now, onto our recap. Teaching context clues is more than teaching a skill that is assessed on a standardized test. It is a lifelong skill of literate people. Teaching context clues also develops their independence. By having students rely on the skill instead of depending on teachers. That's because in most of our cases, we can't follow our students from the beginning of the day to the end. We have to develop their independence. Sherry's method and my method might be different than yours. What's important is to remember that it benefits language learners. They need to learn how to use context clues to construct meaning. The goal is that they don't sit on the carpet with book in hand, peering at their friends and thinking, what are they doing with all these words? In the next episode, Dr. Jim Ewing will share approaches and strategies to teach language learners math. Thank you for listening. I'll see you soon. Be safe and be rooted in peace. It's your turn to play traffic light teaching. Tweet at me either your red, yellow, or green light from this particular episode. I'd like to share a testimony from an educator who participated in one of my online courses.
Hi, my name is Mary, and I recently took part in the January 2020 Scaffolding for L's hosted by Tan. It was a phenomenal course, to say the least. Really one of the best things I've done recently. Best investment of time and money. As a teacher, I very seldom have people come up to me and say, hey, Mary, what are you struggling with? What would you like a little help with? And that happened almost every week with each of us. We would bring something that was frustrating, being it small or large, and people would help you see it from another perspective, help you see another way that you might tackle it. But everything was always geared around helping our L's comprehend and understand and grow better, which I think was really driven home that there is no problem that we can't solve if we will just be willing to be creative and open to continuously trying. So again, I encourage you to participate and enjoy. Take care.